Welcome to Blueprint to Boom, your plan for taking a small idea and building something big. Hello, and welcome to Blueprint to Boom. I'm David Henderson Begg, and I'm thrilled to have you join me for the very first episode. Today, I want to start with something that lies at the absolute heart of this entire journey: small and medium-sized enterprises, SMEs in the UK. Let's begin with some scale. As of January 2024, there were approximately 5.5 million private sector businesses in the UK, and of those, nearly all, over 99%, are SMEs, defined as businesses with fewer than 250 employees. And SMEs don't just dominate by number, they are a major force in employment and economic output too. They account for around 60% of UK employment and nearly 48% of business turnover. Put it another way, every time you pass by a local shop, an artisan maker, a specialist service provider, a tech startup, or a boutique agency, there's a very good chance that they are part of that SME mix. And yet, despite their ubiquity and importance, many SMEs face steep challenges: access to finance, scaling operations, navigating regulation, adopting digital tools, and building resilience in a changing economy. That's why this show matters, because behind each of those 5.5 million businesses are people with dreams, ambition, and expertise, and sometimes obstacles that stand in their way. If SMEs don't grow, don't thrive, we lose more than just individual ventures. We lose innovation, jobs, community, value, diversity of ideas, and the dynamism of the economy. So in each episode here, we'll dig into the stories, the strategies, the support systems, the challenges, and the breakthroughs that can help SMEs reach their full potential. Because it matters, not just to business owners themselves, but to all of us who benefit when local economies are stronger, more resilient, and more creative. So thank you for being here. Let's get into it and let's build some momentum for SMEs across the UK to grow, thrive, and transform. Now, every week we are going to introduce a guest who is themselves a leader in an SME industry or is a business that provides a service to SMEs, provides critical advice to them. And it absolutely wasn't planned. It just fell this way that our very first guest is my friend and colleague, Matthew Dunn, who is the Chief Operating Officer of Labyrinth Technology, a managed service provider that looks after SMEs. Hello and welcome, Matt.
Hey, glad to be here, and especially on the very first episode.
So. I know, it's exciting. Before we dive into today's conversation, though, I want to check out, as we will do every week, what's happening in headlines. We're going to call this section Blueprint Buzz, and this is going to be a roundup of news stories affecting the small business world here in the UK. Okay, the first piece of news that I found while I was doing some research today was that there's going to be a new energy levy, which is going to hit small firms and charities. It's a nuclear levy, which is going to appear on electricity bills from November, designed to help fund the £20 billion Sizewell C nuclear project. And obviously, nuclear energy is an important part of the mix. Energy costs in the UK is one thing that's holding back productivity because of the cost of electricity. But large energy-intensive industries are going to be exempt. Great, that's going to help from that side of things. But the burden is going to be on small businesses and charities. And the Federation of Small Businesses has actually warned that this levy could add thousands of pounds to annual energy bills for small firms such as cafes, shops, and workarounds and workshops. Have you come across this issue, Matt?
I have, yeah. I mean, I see the benefit in what they're trying to do in safeguarding national infrastructure and bringing control of our key energy sources back to the UK, especially with all the wars around the world and the impact that we've seen that that's had on energy prices. But it is concerning. Small businesses are already being, under a lot of pressure with a lot of increased taxes, unprecedented levels of tax, and it's going to be a lot of added pressure.
I mean, our business, probably electricity isn't a huge thing. We're in an office, but energy intensive small businesses like cafes and restaurants, it's a huge issue for them at the moment. The second news item that I came across was about high street closures. And we have all seen, I think, high street parades that are just almost derelict now. The Co-op Group has warned that 60,000 small shops and 150,000 jobs are at risk unless business rates are urgently reformed. Its new report, published ahead of the autumn budget, which of course we've got to look forward to on November the 26th, says that the current system penalises small bricks and mortars retailers while online giants avoid equivalent costs. The co-op argues that the business rates model is no longer fit for purpose, particularly for independent high street traders. And that's something that we've come across as well, the issue with business rates, isn't it?
Yeah.
The third thing that I just want to talk about today is about support measures for SMEs, and this is a question that we're going to raise in every episode towards the end. The Q3 2025 SME confidence tracker shows that over half, 52% of small businesses feel government support measures are not meeting their needs. Many SMEs cite late payments from larger firms as a major issue, how support schemes are slow, complex, and poorly enforced, and how there is confusion about new funding streams and regional growth programmes. Inflation and borrowing costs are showing some early signs of stabilising, but confidence remains low. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, there are some government schemes out there to help small businesses. I think there's not a lot of awareness about them. I'm aware of a couple of small businesses in particular regions of the country that have benefited from grants to buy new hardware. But I think in general, this government and the last government have been pretty out of touch with what's going on with small businesses and what they need. But also this issue of invoicing and big companies not paying their bills on time, we've seen firsthand the huge impact that has on small businesses. We've seen a couple of small businesses that unfortunately haven't survived these challenging times, that were literally living paycheck to paycheck and waiting for an invoice, usually from a big company that's way past due, just to be able to pay their other bills. And there really needs to be some regulation. Rules around that.
Yeah, absolutely right. And that's the roundup of news for this week. We will do that every episode. Okay, Matt, before we get down to business, it's time for... you know what's coming.
Yeah.
It's time for the part of the show that HR departments everywhere wish didn't exist. Welcome to the shock interview. You see what I did there? Shock interview, mock interview.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Got it. The segment where we ask the questions that no sensible employer should ever ask in a real interview. Please remember that. That's the point of this. Do not ask these questions in a real interview.
I'm now going to be thinking, I've done countless interviews in my time. Now I'm going to think, have I asked any of these questions and shouldn't I have?
So these are all inspired by actual interview questions that people have been asked over the years, the sort that make you want to look straight at the camera and say, did you really just ask that? You've told us that there are a few areas off limits don't worry, we're steering clear of that. And anything else, Henry will just edit out afterwards.
Okay.
All right? So are you ready to see what's left? Okay.
Let's do it.
But first of all, an easy one. Just to introduce yourself to everybody, and as if you were in an employment interview right now, tell us about what you've been doing for the last few years.
Well, for the last 10 years, obviously I've been doing the same thing, but every year has been very different. But so I've been, besides growing my family, I've got four children, which is a full-time job in its own. I have been overseeing the day-to-day operations of an IT managed services provider. So that's, you know, making sure the clients are getting a good level of service, but also leading the team, making sure we're leading the way with technology and cybersecurity. So, yeah.
Okay. So the first set of questions we're calling boundary blurrers, questions that pry far too much into someone's private life or make odd assumptions. Do you consider yourself more of a morning person or an evening person? And how would that affect your willingness to work weekends?
Definitely more of a morning person, but that's probably because my day starts at about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, if I'm lucky. I've got four kids that are up throughout the night. So, yeah, I like to get started earlier on because midday for me is 8, 9 o'clock. And that's I used to wonder why I was always wanting to eat in the office so early, having my lunch at 10, 11 o'clock, and others are eating their lunch mid-afternoon, and they're the ones that I know are getting enough sleep.
And does your wife like you working weekends?
No, definitely not.
But you get permission sometimes, don't
yep.
you? If I called your friends right now, what would they say your worst habit is?
Probably not spending enough time with them. and being too secluded in what's going on in my family or work life. So, yeah, definitely not coming out enough when I'm invited to the pub.
Okay. What do you usually do on a Friday night?
Sleep. Yeah, not a lot.
Okay.
Sit at home.
Okay, now some loaded or biased questions, which might include subtle discrimination or misplaced judgment disguised as personality fit questions. So we're quite a young dynamic team, but do you think you'd fit in?
Yeah, I think I'd fit in. I'm quite forward thinking with technology and trends and that sort of thing, but yeah, I'd like to think that I fit in. Maybe others would disagree.
Would you be comfortable working for someone younger than you?
That's a good question. I think until I'm put in that position, then I don't know. I think it's something that a lot of people do struggle with, and they shouldn't struggle with it. But I think some people do struggle with it.
Well, I personally hope that you're not going to be put in that position for quite a long time, just to be clear. Okay. unless David runs a coup, which is possible.
Yeah.
Okay. do you have any family commitments that might get in the way of working late?
Just a few. Yeah, I mean, as I said, I've got four children and a wife that will be very displeased if I leave her dealing with those four children any longer than necessary.
Okay, a few manipulative or impossible questions that test for the wrong thing or may try to trip you up. And remember, these are real questions that people used to ask. It's like, why would you ask this? So if you were an animal, which one would you be and why?
I'd be a cat because they're quite self-sufficient. They don't need a lot of looking after. They're quite clean. They're quite organized and they just sort of take care of themselves.
I'm sorry, with cats, there is definitely something going on there.
How so?
Just in the way they are. There's a level of intelligence that we don't understand in cats. Definitely, I'm sure of it. What's your biggest weakness? And don't say perfectionism.
Perfectionism. OCD, pretty always wanting things to be perfect and maybe letting it hold me back from getting 80% of the way there instead.
Okay. And finally, some cringeworthy, awkward finishers. How would you feel about dressing a bit more corporate for the office for client meetings?
I'm all for it. I'm usually wearing a suit, actually. I have very early on in my career, so yeah, I'm all for it. But I'm also not one to feel that everyone should dress suited and booted in the workplace.
And actually, on a subject that's probably going to come up time and time again because it's a hot topic at the moment, where are you on the whole working from home, hybrid working thing?
Well, that's a loaded question.
I know, right?
it's a difficult one because obviously there's two sides to it, and you know, from the employee's perspective, we're living in a world where both members of the both parents need to work, and trying to, when you get to kids being at school age, trying to deal with school runs and things like that, it's a challenge. But from forgetting from the employer's perspective, especially when you're early on in your career, you've got a lot to learn. And if you're not, in an office, you're surrounded by, peers that you can learn from, mentors, role models, then it does impact you. So I think early on in your career, certainly I feel the office is the best, better place to be. People more mature and more senior level roles, having a balance is definitely beneficial.
Yeah, I would agree. I think social skills and social development are so important, especially in people's formative years. When you enter the workplace at either 18 straight out of school or after you've done a degree, and then up until you're 30, you're still learning. Mm. You're still developing. You're still developing those skills. You cannot do that via Teams. You need to be in that group environment. I passionately believe that.
Yeah, a lot of people see it as a trust issue, and I don't think that's necessarily the case. It's taking our business into account, we're an IT managed service provider, and 50% of what we do is customer service. And it's those conversations that you hear when people are on the phone with customers, and that you just don't get that if people are working from home.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Okay, final question. If you got this job, what would make you want to stay here forever?
Other than money, I think freedom to explore. Ideas and obviously in my case technology, because I'm very passionate about that. I don't like to do the same things over and over again, especially in a rapidly evolving world.
And it is, and that's something we'll talk about more in a minute. Well, that's it. That concludes the shock interview. You've handled those questions like a pro, which, let's be honest, you are. So it's a fun reminder that interviews should be about skills and potential, not about weird hypotheticals or personal details that don't belong in the room. So thanks for playing along. But to everybody listening, please don't ever try those questions at home or in the office. Right, now we're going to get down to business. So, Matt, Chief Operating Officer of Labyrinth Technology, a managed service provider that looks, by definition, looks after the small and medium enterprises that we care about. And we could run probably a podcast that just talks about small business IT, but that would get very boring for everybody. So we are definitely going to have you back for future episodes, but as it played out that this was our very first episode, what I thought would be really good to talk to you about today is the foundations.
Okay.
Because IT is essential for every small business. You have to have the technology in place. You've got to have the hardware. You've got to have the right software. You need the website. You need the emails. And I know that you've seen examples where people have got it wrong.
Plenty.
Plenty. Yeah. And that causes problems down the line, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
So if you were starting a new business today, what would be the first decisions that you would make?
First thing I think about has got to be data, and how I would structure that data, how I would share that data, because we are in a very data-driven world. I think a lot of people starting a business, they look at IT as more of a nuisance or, you know, a cost that they could do without. But in reality, every business, whether it's a law firm, recruitment company, or a little shop, they'll rely on data. And I see so many times people don't get it right from the start, whether it's, you know, whether it's just sharing the way they share information, people not having access to it. And it just leads to expensive work later on to correct it. And especially when with AI, everyone's talking about AI, you know, generative AI, agentic AI, autonomous AI. You know, this is just where we are now, where we're going to be in a couple of years. But AI can be really powerful, a really powerful way of, besides automating things, giving you quick access to information. And it really relies on that information being properly structured, up to date, being secure. And if you don't get that right from the start, it's going to be really difficult later on to put it right. And you're going to be probably pretty inefficient early on with, you know, forgetting the whole AI discussion. You're going to be pretty inefficient early on if people can't access the information.
I think it's really interesting, that answer, actually, because I think most people, when they hear about IT, they're immediately thinking laptops, monitors, emails. And you've gone straight to a level below that, actually, which is absolutely right. It's the foundation of it, is the data.
And you need to think bigger picture with this sort of thing. You know, what computer you get, there's a level of importance there. Cybersecurity, also important. The data is just the core of everything that you do as a business.
And so, talking about the data, what mistakes can people make on day one in terms of how they handle that data?
So the biggest thing is just not thinking about it. People, what we typically see is people just, you know, having files sitting on their own computers, working very siloed, so they're not working as a team, constantly asking each other to share files, or, you know, maybe they've a bit more tech savvy and they've set themselves up with OneDrive and they're trying to share folders all over the place. But you know, if you don't get that structure right, and it's really difficult for people to find the information they need and quickly, then you're going to be wasting a lot of time early on.
I think, and I know that this plays into the data conversation, I think one of the decisions that a lot of people are going to make early on, and actually it's possibly not even a conscious decision, which is the wrong thing, is whether to use Google or whether to use Microsoft. So you're going to have to come off the fence. I'm not saying you're on the fence, but I think people need to know what is the use case for those two different branches, because it's going to be a really important decision. Do I start with Google? Do I start with Microsoft? And what are the considerations that I should be thinking about?
So we deal with a lot of small businesses that have started with Google, with younger entrepreneurs that have started the business and, you know, been brought up using Google outside of the business world. And most of them reach a stage early on where they then have to invest in moving to Microsoft 365. There's a combination of reasons there. The biggest one is the security and management benefits that you get with Microsoft 365. Once you're a more matured organization, you need to start centrally managing security, computers, and that sort of thing in your business. And Google lacks that. So it's a huge roadblock, and it can be quite expensive and disruptive to, you know, to deal with having to make that change later on.
And siloing data you mentioned as well, which you can segregate data.
Sure.
Differently with the different products, can't you?
Yeah.
So data is an important foundation.
Yep.
But what does a solid IT setup look like in that first 6 to 12 months?
First 6 to 12 months, I company manage computers, don't have people bring in their own device and all of that kind of thing. I know that there's a lot of cost pressures for a small business, but you need to think about cybersecurity. So the foundations for cybersecurity in place, company-managed computers, a well thought out way of sharing information. That, you know, the tools that you use there are really going to vary depending on what sector you're working in, whether that's something straightforward like Microsoft 365, SharePoint, OneDrive, or, you know, a POS system if you're a retail operation, but also an IT partner in place, a good IT partner in place, and I use the word partner intentionally there, that can help you, along your journey.
You mentioned cybersecurity, yep. And that is absolutely a podcast episode.
Yes, it is,
its own right.
Good
but,
for you.
But can you come up with just one or two pieces of concrete advice that every small business should take right at the beginning?
Before I give some specific advice, one of the things I would say is that a lot of small businesses, startups, again, lots of cost pressure, and they see it as, well, the bigger businesses are the only people having cyber attacks, and that's not the case at all. Most of them are small businesses. But if you're going to invest your hard-earned personal cash into starting a business, and your personal time into starting that business, then you need to make sure it's protected. You wouldn't buy your first house. You know, it's very difficult to get onto the property ladder these days. You wouldn't buy your first house and then just not buy, you wouldn't not insure that house just because of cost pressures. You would look after it. And the same applies to your small business. So again, get some advice on, you don't need a really expensive cybersecurity consultant, but just having someone in place to guide you, cover the basics. You know, I can list out all the basics: multi-factor authentication, anti-malware, you know, the list goes on. You don't need a massive cybersecurity budget to get started, but you do need some foundations in place. They don't cost a lot of money, and sometimes it's just about having your system configured properly, especially if you're going to roll out Microsoft 365. Get a professional to do it, get a professional to look after it, and they're going to make sure it's optimized and all of the out-of-the-box security is turned on, at least.
And have you come across situations where it's actually cost people much more money in the long run because they haven't put the foundations in place?
Constantly, yeah. I mean, we've dealt with countless cyber attacks, always small businesses that didn't have good security in place, and some that went out of business. Very significant impact from those cyber attacks. But also, there's a lot of people investing in Microsoft 365 premium and enterprise subscriptions, and they think that just by paying for those subscriptions that they're protecting themselves. But when we look under the hood at how it's been set up, they haven't turned on half of the functionality in there, and they've just been wasting money on these subscriptions. Sometimes they don't need them, but a lot of the time there's just, whether they've tried to do it themselves or they're working with an IT provider that's just not proactive or doesn't care about their smaller customers, one of the two. And it is a big cost.
This is a really difficult question because it very much just depends on what size of business you're setting up and what type of business you're setting up. But can you give any idea of what sort of budget people should be putting on their IT to start with?
In terms of setup costs or overheads, both?
Setup costs.
So, it really does depend on what industry you're working in, and under requirements, certainly, and how many people that you get started with. But, it doesn't really need to, let's say you're starting up with one other person, it doesn't really need to cost more than a few thousand, just to get a couple of good computers, get 365 set up properly from day one, get the foundations in place, and that is going to make all the difference in how efficient you run and the costs that are going to come later on.
Are there any non-negotiables that every small business needs from day one?
I would say the big thing, again, thinking bigger picture, is an IT strategy. Because if you don't know where you're going, then how are you going to get there? And if you mm-hmm. Businesses starting out today have a real opportunity to embrace all of this cutting edge technology and get it right from day one. But without any kind of plan, does not need to cost a fortune to get a good IT partner in place to help you with that. But you need to know, where you're going and how technology is going to support your business.
So having done all of that, what do you think are the biggest IT mistakes that new businesses make in their first year?
Loads. That's going to be hard to, it's going to be hard to shortlist those.
Two.
So one of them has got to be just trying to do it all yourself. And again, I sympathize. It's easy to look, in from the outside and say, you should be spending money on this, should be spending your money on that. And, when it's your own personal money running the business in those first couple of years, or longer in many cases, then every penny counts. And I do get that. But if you try and do it all yourself, it's going to be costing you more money in the long run. And the other side to that is choosing the wrong IT provider partner can be really detrimental to your business, because if you're just going for that cheapest quote or going for the biggest service provider out there, they're probably not really giving you the strategic advice that really is so essential in those early years and in the long term.
Could there be some warning signs that they might have got something wrong?
Potentially, it's going to depend on what's gone wrong, I guess. But inefficient processes, lots of duplication of data. If you've got loads of different systems and you're stacking loads of tools and they're not working together, if you're duplicating processes, you've got a lot of admin overheads in terms of admin intensive processes. Besides the obvious slow computers and ransomware taking over your device, if you haven't thought of the security, those are the two key ones.
Okay. I'm going to put a little break in here to ask you for your competition question that we asked you in advance to think of. Labyrinth Technology has very kindly put a Samsung Galaxy A9 Android tablet on the table as a prize for this season. So every episode we're going to be asking a question, and you'll be able to enter the answer to the question on our website and go into a prize draw to win this Samsung Galaxy tablet. So Matt, what is your question?
What percentage of small businesses in the UK go out of business within 6 months of experiencing a significant cyber attack?
Oh, wow. Okay. That's topical.
Yeah.
So what percentage of small businesses in the UK go out of business within 6 months having experienced a cyber attack?
Yeah.
Okay. Enter the answer on our website with a chance to win that Android tablet. Okay, so carrying on with our vein of getting technology right, how can we, as a newly formed business, how do we make the technology work for us, not against us?
So the key there is working with someone that is prepared to actually sit down with you and understand your business, and talk to you about what your needs are and your pain points are, and help you along that journey. Again, going back to the whole thing of choosing the right IT partner there, if you're just working with a massive company that's providing you a cheap, break fix type agreement, they're not really going to be offering you that kind of personal service. And in order to help technology work for you, you need to be an expert in technology, but you also need to have an understanding of how the business works, and having those people work together on that is essential.
So as an MSP, a managed service provider, and do they come in all different shapes and sizes, I guess?
They sure do, yeah.
how would you pick one?
It's difficult. There's a lot of bad managed services providers out there that give the industry a bad name. We see companies that change IT providers like a mobile phone contract every 2 years, and that's just the norm to them. Things that I would say is ask questions about the size of the company. You don't want to go for a company that's so small that they can't handle your business. I mean, every business has to start somewhere, but if you're, you know, if you've got ambitious growth plans and you're working with a really low cost one man band, you might get a personal service from them, but what's going to happen, you know, when...
Sorry, just restart a sentence and I'll cut that out. All good.
But what's going to happen when they're off sick, they're on holiday? But on the other end of the scale, if you work with a very large managed service provider, then there's a very good chance that they're just not going to be giving you that personal service that you need. And then on top of that, you need to be making sure you're comparing apples with apples. So, you know, if you're getting these quotes that are really cheap and then getting quotes that are really expensive, expensive doesn't necessarily mean it's better. But you need to be understanding what's actually included, what the SLAs are, where the extra charges might be, so you understand what you're actually getting for your money and focus on value, not price.
Yeah, well, I mean, that applies to everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like everything in life, you get what you pay for, but I think with IT, it's even more important, isn't it? So thinking not just about the service provider, but about the services that you are purchasing, we hear a lot about the cloud. Mm-hmm. At the moment. So first of all, what is the cloud?
Yeah, good question. Yeah. I mean, the cloud is, it really is just someone else's computers, someone else's servers. But the big difference is, you know, this, effectively it's data centers, right? So it's software or infrastructure that runs in someone else's data centers. It's their responsibility to provide and manage that infrastructure. But the massive difference between having your own servers and using the cloud is the enormous amount of resilience, redundancy that is usually built into these systems so that they're highly available and the low cost. And you don't have to worry about supporting servers, infrastructure. That's someone else's problem. So it's very scalable.
So just because you're using the cloud, does that mean that everything's safe?
No, you mean you need to pick the right cloud solutions and not just pick them, but configure them properly. So you need to do your due diligence. We audit a lot of cloud service providers and generally we see a lot of good things in place, but we've also seen some pretty horrendous things. You do need to do your due diligence and set it up properly.
And what specifically should people be thinking about when picking their cloud tools, which includes things like email hosting and collaboration tools now, doesn't it?
Yeah, so you need to think a bit bigger picture. We see a lot of people just stacking loads of different products, cloud services, and they're duplicating data. The systems don't talk to each other. So the starting point, really, if you're choosing a new product, is going to be looking at what you've already got. And do any of the tools you already have provide this functionality? Huge issue we see with Microsoft 365 is that people don't really understand some of the apps that are included there. They then go about buying third-party solutions that they don't need. But if you do need third-party solutions, then look at what you've got and think holistically. Can these integrate? Are they scalable? Are they going to scale to your growth plans?
Can you think of an example of some of the functionality in Microsoft 365 that a lot of people won't realize is there?
Loads. I'll list a few. Some of the top ones: Microsoft Bookings.
What does Bookings do?
You can use it for a few things. You can use it to manage your own calendar, so people can book meetings in with you without you having to let them know your availability and go back and forth, trying to work that out. But also, if you're a company that provides some kind of service where you provide an appointment at a fixed slot, then you can use it for that. You could use it if you're a school for booking parents' evening appointments in. It's most people don't know about Microsoft Bookings, and it's included in pretty much all of them. Also, Microsoft Planner is a good way of managing projects, managing day-to-day tasks. Microsoft Loop. Good. Microsoft Loop is an interesting one.
Tell us what Loop does.
I always find this one hard to explain, but Microsoft Loop is another collaboration tool. It's an engaging way to share information, I guess, whether you're building a project or tracking tasks. Or need to build some kind of knowledge base. It's an interactive tool for collaborating, really, and you can plug lots of different Microsoft solutions into it.
What about Microsoft To-Do?
Okay. This is one of the big problems with Microsoft 365 is that there are a lot of tools and features that can do the same things, and people get really confused, especially with files. But Microsoft To-Do is another way of tracking your tasks. The key difference is that it's more focused as a personal task tracking solution. So you can, you know, your flagged emails will pop up in there. You can create private tasks in there. You can share tasks with people in there, but not in the way that you can with Microsoft Planner, which is a lot more team and project focused.
And so you mentioned there that an email that you've flagged in Outlook will come through to Microsoft To-Do.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of interconnectivity between there is, all of these different things.
A lot of people don't realize that. I mean, you can even see your tasks that you create in To-Do in Microsoft Planner. So when people get confused about how to use these different tools, a lot of them actually are all looking at the same information. Microsoft Planner, if you flag an email, a lot of people will say to me, I'm flagging emails, I'm creating tasks in this other third-party tool like Trello or Monday.com. And I've got all these different places where all my tasks are, whereas in reality, you can use a tool like Microsoft To-Do or Planner just to do it all in one place, and you don't need to pay anything extra for it.
Okay. So we've talked a little bit about the foundational data structure. We've talked a little bit about the software and the cloud tools. We haven't really spoken about the hardware at all much. Which is what a lot of people, as I said a minute ago, will be that when you talk about IT, they're just going to immediately, their brain is going to go to the laptop.
Sure.
So what should people be thinking about on that side of things?
So one of the biggest things I have to say is if you're going to buy computers yourself, make sure you buy them with the professional business edition of Windows.
Okay. What's the difference? What are the options?
Computers that you buy with the home version of Windows are a lot cheaper, but you don't get the central management capabilities. You don't get encryption capability built in, which is through BitLocker. And more often than not, at some point, you're just going to end up having to pay a couple of £100 plus to upgrade it, because it's going to hold you back from doing something as your business matures. So I'd say that's one of the most important things. You do need to look at the hardware spec. You need to make sure you've got enough storage on that computer, and that's going to depend on how you're sharing information. If you're syncing loads of data to your computer through OneDrive, you're going to need a big solid state drive on there, which is, you know, where all the data is stored, but also processing power, memory. You need to be thinking about what industry you're working in, what software you use. You need to understand what the requirements of those software are. Otherwise, you may end up wasting a lot of money buying the wrong thing.
Let's get really geeky for a minute.
Okay.
So if you were starting a business, just an ordinary office job sort of business, tell us the spec of the laptop.
I'd be going for a minimum of an i5 or an Ultra 5 processor. We'd use i3 or Ultra 3 in a business environment. In terms of memory, these days, 16 gigabyte of memory. Even if you're just using Microsoft Office, most of the time people are opening hundreds of Chrome or Edge or Firefox tabs, and they use a lot of memory. So, from what we've seen, that's definitely the minimum. In terms of storage, 256 gigabyte SSD is a bit tight, but you know, it's okay for some people. But yeah, I'd be aiming for that as a minimum.
Okay. So having got those foundations in place, we've thought about the data structure, we've thought about the software that we're going to use, we've thought about what hardware we're going to buy. How can a small business ensure that their IT setup grows with them?
So you need to have besides having a strategy in place, you need a 3-year roadmap in place. And that can be difficult early on because you don't know where your business is going to go and how quickly it's going to grow, but you need to forecast. You need to forecast that growth. I know we've talked a lot about IT service providers, but having that expert advice and someone that can review IT strategy with you and that roadmap with you at least once a year is going to be so key, because otherwise you're going to have costs that creep up on you that you're not expecting. Or you're just going to be flying blind, making the wrong decisions and paying a lot of money later on to fix them.
Well, I think that's right, because I think it's important that everybody plans ahead.
Yeah.
And so just in the same way that if you're starting a small business, you should be doing a budget.
Yeah, exactly.
A financial plan for the next 1 year, 3 years, you know, what are all my expenses going to be? What's all my income going to be? Am I going to make a profit? Am I going to be a loss? Can I weather the loss? So we should be doing the same with IT.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are there any examples that you can think of where that planning has saved a company time or money later?
It's difficult to think of examples because I see small businesses more often than not making the mistakes rather than getting it right from the start. We did have a small business that we watched grow, you know, to hundreds of employees from just four, and early on they made some major mistakes with their IT with that first business, and they ended up losing all of their company data. When they sold that business, they were then looking at starting a new business, and early on, before they'd even registered that company, they'd learned their lesson. They were coming to us and talking to us about their requirements, getting the data structured properly, and it's made it a lot easier for them to grow and be efficient from day one.
My final question here was how can small businesses make better technology decisions, even if they're not tech people? But I think
you've got the message. Yeah.
I think you've actually answered that question quite a lot.
Yeah.
But so let me put that a different way. If you're starting a small business, you are going to have a lot of costs. It's going to be overwhelming. You've got staff costs, you've got rent costs, you've got tax costs, you've got health and safety, HR to deal with. Do you get a sense that people don't prioritize the IT enough?
Yeah.
And how can you help people to understand how important it is?
Yeah, massively. I think it's surprising actually how much in this day and age, in this technology driven world, that people still just see it as an optional extra nuisance, when really they can use it to having leading edge over their competitors and be efficient from day one. In terms of how, in the same way, if you're growing a business and you know nothing about accounting, there's probably an element of stuff that you can work out on Google, but you can go to your accountant. You're going to pay some money for their service, but that accountant is going to give you advice that's actually going to save you money and make sure you're doing things strategically. Similar with IT, you're going to spend some money having a consultant or a managed service provider in place, but they can also help understand what is your budget, because there's only so much money in those early days. So it's well and good saying buy all this stuff, you need it, the money has to come from somewhere. They can at least help you prioritize and say, right, look, if this is the absolute most that you can afford to take on monthly or invest at the moment, here's how you should prioritize that budget.
So if you were setting up a small business with four people, roughly how much would that cost them a month in, or should that cost them a month in IT support?
So in terms of IT support, if you included the core Microsoft 365 licenses they needed, the foundations with cybersecurity, I'd say you're looking at about £75 a month per person, stripping out those licenses, ballpark £50-60 per person. It's going to vary significantly between service providers and depending on the service that you're getting. If you're looking at paying massively less than that, then you're probably underinvesting.
And as a business owner, I'm always interested in return on investment.
Yeah.
So would you say that £75 a month is an investment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you're trying to grow a business, the last thing you need to be dealing with is IT headaches, IT support issues, or your IT is not working for you because you don't have the right technology in place, all of that time, you don't have a lot of time when you're starting a business. You're probably working, you know, long 7 days a week, long hours, and you need someone else to take that off your plate.
Do you actually see that where business leaders are actually wasting their time and energy dealing with IT problems that they shouldn't have to be doing?
Yeah, I mean, the IT support requirements aren't going to go away just because you don't have a service provider, and you'll tend to find people are just wasting time either because of downtime or trying to implement their own workarounds, doing things their own way, and senior people in the business, there might be one person in the business, whether that's the owner or someone else who knows a bit more about IT than the others, is then spending loads of time fixing people's issues. It's not an effective use of their time, especially when you're trying to grow and focus your efforts on that.
Okay. Okay, so having gone into what you should be doing as a new business for IT in some depth, I'm now going to ask Matt to give us three actionable tips that every small business should do with regards to foundational IT. And as we build up these actionable tips, they'll all be available on the website over time. So what are your first ever three Blueprint to Boom bullets?
My first one has got to be put in place an IT strategy. Work out what technology's role is in supporting your business as you grow. If you have a plan, then as I said, you know where you're going with it, and you can have some kind of idea as you grow as to what you need to invest in technology, and how it's going to help you achieve your mission. The second one is choose an IT partner. Again, partner, not service provider. They will position themselves as the same thing, but you need a strategic partner who's going to grow with you and help you make the right decisions. There's no point in me saying here, put all these certain cybersecurity measures in place, because there's countless cybersecurity measures you need to put in place, or you put this certain technology in place. You need an advisor who's going to look specifically at your requirements and work with you on that. And the third one is put an IT roadmap in place, make a plan for the next 3 years. You might change that plan after a year if you don't grow as you intended, or if you grow way faster than intended, but just have a plan, have a skeleton plan to work towards. It's going to help you plan your costs, and as well as plan any work and technology milestones that you need to be working towards.
That's awesome. Thank you very much. That's great advice. Okay, so the final segment is the scorecard. Now, this is, again, we're going to build up this over time. We're going to see the metrics on the website as we get the data in. I'm going to ask every guest the same questions. And this is about the situation for small businesses in the UK at the moment. I don't want this to be political. This is okay. If we can avoid it. This is not about politics.
Yeah.
This is just about the environment. So on a scale of 1 to 5, how supportive do you think the current political and regulatory climate is for small businesses in the UK? 1 is terrible, 5 is excellent.
I'm going to go with 2.
Okay, a low score on that one. Regulation and red tape. How would you rate the level of bureaucracy small businesses face today? 1 is unbearable, or 5 is light touch?
I would say we're somewhere in the middle, 3. There is a lot of red tape in the UK, but we've seen in the last few years some relaxing in areas, and especially one of the very on topic, AI. The UK is currently known as a bit of a to have a relaxed approach to AI regulation at the moment, and there's a lot of businesses investing in growing AI technology in the UK as a result of that.
We'll probably do a whole episode on AI
yeah,
season 2 or season 3 at some point, haven't we? Tax and incentives. How would you rate the tax environment for small businesses right now? Thinking about things like corporation tax, VAT thresholds, incentives like R&D credits. One is terrible, five is excellent.
I've got to go with one. We've seen firsthand the impact that more and more tax is having on small business, and you know, government being a bit out of touch with the challenges and you know, budgets that small businesses have. So pretty poor at the moment.
Access to finance, availability of funding and credit.
In all honesty, I don't have too much experience in that area, I couldn't really comment.
Go on, based on your perception, then pluck a figure out of thin air.
I'm going to go with two.
We've got to have something on the have something on the dial.
I'm going to go with two.
Okay, infrastructure and skills.
Okay,
digital connectivity, transport, utilities that small businesses rely on.
Infrastructure again, I think, is becoming. I'm starting to sound very negative here, aren't I?
An honest indictment. I think
I'm going to give it two. I think especially the transport network in the UK is abysmal. The cost is one of the biggest factors, and that's, you know, we talked about working from home, hybrid working earlier. Big part of why employees don't like to come into the work is transport costs. But also reliability, it's a big issue.
Yeah, and I mean, in London, central London, the road network is absolutely shocking. And
yeah, don't get me started on potholes.
It's not even potholes. I mean, cycling and walking, both of which I do and I love doing, is great. But as a small business, you sometimes have to get to A to B faster or carrying a lot of stuff. And you need that infrastructure to be in place and working.
One of the things I've always found crazy, and I've been working in London the last 10 years, is you can't park anywhere. And there's no loading areas. So every time, the amount of times we're taking deliveries or, we've got an internet provider coming to install lease lines, and they just accept it now that it's a cost of doing business, that they're going to have to park somewhere they shouldn't and pay fines. Because there is nowhere else to park.
And when people get a parking ticket, because they're delivering something, it's not them that pays for the ticket; they just pass it on to their customer. That's an element of fines and taxation that I don't think is always understood by people. Is that those costs just get passed on to the end user?
Yeah, I mean, I get there's got to be parking restrictions in place if everyone can park wherever the hell they wanted to, then there's all kinds of issues there. But for businesses, there's just, businesses need to run.
Okay. So final score on the dial, stability and confidence. I'm getting a sense here of which direction we're going in. How would you rate the level of stability and predictability in the UK policy environment for small businesses?
Two.
Okay. Thank you, Matt Dunn, Chief Operating Officer of Labyrinth Technology, for an informative and fascinating insight into the foundations of small business technology on the very first episode of Blueprint 2 Boom. Was it as painful as you thought it was going to be?
No, much easier.
There we go then. I told you it was going to be easy, didn't I? Thank you very much for staying with us for the entire journey. Remember to go onto the website and answer the competition question. We will be back with a full season of small business tips and tricks. So I do hope you stay with us. Thank you very much indeed. We'll be right back.